All right, welcome back, everyone, to the second hour of Liberation Nation, normally hosted by Deacon John, who is not feeling well today, so we wish him our best, and I am honored to sub in for the day. I know our good friend Mona Radler, who has the Feral Hippie Show here on Revolution Radio, is usually the designated host for Deacon John, so I just wanted to give a shout-out to Mona and her show and her vibe and everything she does for the station, as well as everyone who helps out the station on a regular basis. It's pretty awesome. We have Nighthawk himself, the management staff, the hosts, the producers, and all of the listeners and the chatters, of course. Hello to everyone in the chat room. No matter where you're listening, everyone, we are happy to have you aboard. This is, by the way, the 100%, number one 100% listener-supported radio station, commercial-free talk radio station. I think radio station on the net. I'll say radio station like six more times in the next one sentence. Anyway, here we are on the net, and I am encouraging you all to find the donate button or the site support button on our actual website, which is freedomslips.com, or I believe another way to reach us is revolution-radio.com, and then there are other things available to you, the archives, for instance. I subscribe myself. I don't even think as a host I have to, but I enjoy contributing to the station, and I welcome all of you to do just that, because it keeps us in the free speech mode. We are not commercially run. I talk too fast. Commercially run. I said commercially. Is that crazy? All right. We are not commercially run. We are not politically run. We are here to speak our minds. And guess what, everyone? Vinnie Eastwood has decided to join me for the second hour, and we also have Bruce McDonald joining the call. So it's All-Star Day right here on Revolution Radio. I'm Angela Black, and welcome back to the show, Vinnie, and welcome to the show, Bruce.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much. Always a pleasure to listen to you go on one of your riffs, Vinnie. Very, very lucid. I don't know how you do it.
I know, right?
It's called ridiculous amounts of coffee that one of my sponsors gives me. seriously, for talk radio, if you have a look at what caffeine does to the brain, you get on average a 10% increase in your reflexes, and you get a marked increase in your cognitive ability, so your ability to think, speak, process information, react to things that you're saying is actually increased markedly. So before you go on radio, if there's any hosts listening, have a coffee, for goodness sake.
And cafe-ing.
Yeah.
Is that what you said? Yeah, cafe-ing. I like it. Cafe-ing.
Well, I drink so much coffee that I actually had to create a new term for it. I call myself a caffeined.
A caffeined. See, you're just a wise individual with a lot of stuff. That's a brand. I'm ready. All right.
Bruce has some kind of financial news or something, don't you, Bruce?
I do.
I don't know. We brought you on here for a reason.
Well.
Okay. All right.
Let me just say a couple of things quickly. As usually, The Crow has a segment on Deacon John's show, which starts right now, and The Crow is going through a personal issue right now and is not here as well. So it's kind of like one of those moments in space and time where we all get to connect, and that's really awesome. I did want to see if we were finished with the fractal antenna comments, and then I wanted to go into anything on Bruce's mind and also, you know, find out what your responses to that are, Vinny. So we were talking about fractal antenna. We were talking about God. We were talking about what that means. We were talking about Earth. We were talking about basically, you know, levels of cellular.
Well, I can kind of explain this because the reason why my belief in God kind of is the way it is because of a discovery that was made in the early 1900s where a guy invented a granite crystal microscope, as opposed to the electrostatic microscopes today that have a about 10,000 times magnification. This guy invented a machine that was able to get 60,000 times magnification. And the reason this technology was suppressed was because of what he found. He would look inside a cell and it would see that it was made up of all of these other cells that were all operating independently as organisms. Then he'd look inside one of those and then it would be made up of all of these other cells that were operating as independent organisms. Then he'd look inside one of those and so on and so forth. So the theory goes that
we... The Rife telescope?
No, it's not a telescope. It's a microscope.
Oh, microscope. Sorry.
Yeah. But, you know, theories and speculations are rife. So the conclusion that this really spelled out to me is that we live in a fractal universe, that there are organisms in infinite scale down the chain as well as organisms infinitely up the scale and chain. And what this taught me is that my body and my cells are home to countless civilizations of organisms that are living within each and every cell. And as a god to those cells, I'm not a god to other people, I'm not a god to Earth, I'm not a god in any stretch of the imagination, but to these cells that I'm a part of, I kind of am. And just like people who are living on Earth can influence the sway of how the Earth kind of runs, you know, we get to interact, we get to change things, we get to meditate, blah, 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 whatever your thing is. I think it's kind of like in Star Wars, how they talk about midichlorians, these microscopic organisms that live inside all human cells that continually whisper to us and tell us the will of the Force. And I think what that is kind of like a literal translation of what my belief structure is that all these organisms that are living inside us are continually whispering to us and telling us the will of the Source. Whatever that source is, I don't know what it is. I think it was Nikola Tesla who said that I do know that there is a source where all inspiration and ideas come from, but I'm not intelligent enough to know what that source is or what its intentions are. All I know is that I can get inspiration and ideas from it. And something that struck me is sort of like a causal factor or something that sort of proves this, or at least it did to me anyway, was the inventor of the telescope, the first inventors of the telescope. It wasn't actually invented by one guy. It was invented by nine guys who'd never met, who lived on opposite sides of the Earth on the exact same night.
Whoa.
When the signal... The signal is out there, and our DNA acts as an antenna, and we can pull down those signals if we're paying close enough attention. So I think this is why a lot of people talk about, you know, listening to your heart or concentrating, and this is what meditation is what some people are trying to use in order to interpret that will. Personally, I don't meditate whatsoever. I've never had cause to believe that you can accomplish a whole lot with your eyes closed doing nothing. And it seems to me that if you're actually awake and aware and paying attention to everything, you can start to interpret the signals a lot better.
Mm. Yeah, I meditate when I sleep.
Yeah.
I'll be the odd person out here. I do meditate and have been for over 30
years. Welcome, Bruce. Yeah. Welcome.
Yeah. Now, there's different kinds of meditation. I mean, it depends what school you study with. I mean, even when you – we can say that there's a class of meditation in the Buddhist class. There's a class of meditation in the Hindu class. Some meditations are breathing-based, and that's when you get into the Qigong and the prana in the yoga tradition. And some are pure consciousness. They deal only with what's called the 10th gate or the final chakra, the crown chakra. And that, in my estimation, is the most important form of meditation, and is, I guess, a cousin to things like remote viewing and things like that. Now, however, I agree with Vinny that the inner life can become imbalanced when you become a monastic and you do it. It should be integrated into a normal life, working a job, raising kids, being married, whatever you're going to do with your life. But I do think it is important. I think if you go long enough without that stillness, you forget about it. Revelation and remembrance are synonyms in my spiritual dictionary. You know, when something's revealed to you through an expansion of consciousness or a sudden awareness of knowledge you didn't have a moment before, there's also a remembrance that comes along with it, like, oh my God, how come I just didn't always remember this?
Deja vu.
And, Yeah, that's probably a second cousin to it as well. But if you can ideally structure your life so you're serving that inner directive all the time, like you do, Vinny, like with the radio and everything, then yeah, maybe you don't need meditation. I certainly do. I mean, I don't feel too centered, too still, or too spiritual after a 10-hour workday in a big bank. So I do need it, and for me, it's a lot of filtration process. I think some meditation is about, think of it like renovating a house. Like you buy a total beater, and you want to do the whole thing. You gut the whole interior, redo the floors, everything. That's a certain form of meditation that's getting rid of all the bad thinking processes in you. That can take weeks, months, years, depending on the person. And then you get into the new home. And then that's when it gets really, really beautiful. And then if you can get to that stage of the meditation, you'll never quit because it's so rewarding and you get so much from it. But yeah, it's a phenomenal experience. And I'm, we're the only mammal on this planet with the expression of consciousness and individuation and inner life that we have. We know that other mammals dream. We can see dogs in REM sleep, and I've never seen a cat's eyes in REM sleep, but I'm sure they do dream. But we're unique. We're sort of at the top of the creational pile here on planet Earth. And I think that some attention has to go to
top of the creational pile.
Yeah.
Nice.
I think I may have plagiarized that from some Billy Meyer thing I read on the internet, but okay. Nonetheless, I like to be honest about these things. Yeah. Plagiarism's a big issue. but yeah, that's my two cents worth, but living it fully and expressing it. Is I think the highest form of spiritual life, and so Vinny is absolutely correct.
It's kind of like I don't know if you've seen a movie called Major Payne about this crazed military dude who becomes a teacher to these JROTC kids, and they try to like go in and mess with him while he's asleep, but he's sleeping with his eyes open, and it really freaks them out, you know. And I think that's kind of like there's many, many paths to the truth. And In some cases, you need to sleep with your eyes closed for a long time. But after a while, if you train yourself, you learn to dream with your eyes open. And that's kind of what I've started to do, is I've actually started to be able to dream in living color while my eyes are awake and have the inspiration and the knowledge kind of download to me while I'm fully conscious of it. And I don't need to quiet my mind anymore. I used to have to. I think maybe 2 years ago was when I filmed Amit Goswami, the quantum activist. It did like a 10-hour lecture. It was excruciating, but very, very interesting. And one of the things that I found was particularly awesome about it was the group meditation part. We only did it for like a minute or so. And I think maybe if you can sort of vibe with this and even try to do it, like if you close your eyes and you just think for a second, okay, so here's me. I'm in the darkness. I'm in the blackness. There's nothing around me. There's nothing beside me. There's nothing in front, nothing behind. I am completely alone in this darkness with my eyes closed. Then expand your consciousness to include the people that are right next to you. So they would be the other two people on radio with me right now. Then just kind of gel with that. There's two other souls, there's two other beings that are in here with me in the darkness. And beyond that, if you expand your consciousness a little bit more, then there's all the people that are listening on radio right now, thousands upon thousands of them, all with their own lives, all with their children, their careers, and all of the infinite complexity of their lives. And now we're starting to connect to them psychologically through the darkness. And beyond them, there is our countries with all the people in it. Beyond that, there is the entire planet with all the people and all the creatures in it. And you can channel all of that energy, send out good vibes to every single thing that is currently alive on this planet.
Yeah, the ripple effect.
And you can download that energy from all of them, like you're sharing it in a ring, right? You know how everybody was standing in a ring holding hands or whatever, and the energy kind of like goes round the circle like a Hadron Collider, getting faster and faster and faster. And in so doing, you're actually able to kind of have this kind of calm and stillness, and you realize that things aren't all dark, and that you're not alone. And then there is something out there that you can reach out to without even being anywhere near it. And I think that's one of the most important realizations for me, is that you're never alone. You never are. And the idea that you are alone has been tried to, be propagated, I think, through the media. When you're sitting there on your computer games or watching TV or whatever you're doing, in order to distract yourself from the fact that you're not alone, you know? And I think that if we've got that realization, if you've got that kind of spirit in your heart, and I'm not getting all kind of like wavy or iffy-wiffy here, because when we were doing that group meditation with Amit Goswami, it was only for a minute, but you could feel it. You could feel the change in your blood. You could feel the change in your aura sort of thing, you know? So we're talking about something that's actually real, but it's not something that everybody's totally aware of, right? It doesn't matter what your path is to the truth. I believe that there are many, many, many paths to the truth. And I don't think there's any reason to say that one person is better than another or worse than another, unless you're a completely psychopathic scumbag without these gifts, on the other hand, of creativity and love and empathy. But what it says to me is that my role in this planet, in my country, just in myself, is mine and mine alone. But that doesn't mean that I am alone, and I never will be, because I understand that everything is connected. When you look at POW camps in Vietnam, as an example I like to quote quite regularly, they found that those who were atheist, the soldiers who were trapped in those cells alone by themselves, they died. Whereas those who were really, really strong believers in God, they didn't. Because when they're alone in that cell, they're never alone. And when you have that realization, there's almost nothing that can kill you. Like, in a spiritual sense of the word, it's very difficult to get depressed. It's very difficult to lose your motivation, because you realize what you're fighting for.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, very, very, very lucid dissertation there, Vinny. I also come from a country with the which has the Queen on its money, Canada, and we have this fellow over here called Wade Davis, and he's an ethnobotanist and an anthropologist, and he lectures.
Ethnobotanist.
Yeah, so somebody's going to have to Google that. I really can't.
I'm looking it up right now. Yeah.
And his official title for a number of years, I'm not sure if it still is, was Explorer in Residence at National Geographic. You guys may know him from a movie that got made from a book he wrote called The Serpent and the Rainbow, about voodoo in Haiti. Has anybody seen that?
I think I have.
Yeah, it was actually kind of a serious Wes Craven movie. He's the guy that usually does the Nightmare on Elm Street stuff. But it's got a really high rating on IMDb. But he and a bunch of researchers, and he said this on a lecture on our national broadcaster, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, a number of years ago. He gave this lecture series called the Massey Lectures. And he was talking about the complex chemical products derived through natural elements through the shamans in the rainforest in the Amazon. And he lived with them for years, like right in the bush. And there were visiting professors from Princeton, Yale, Harvard, and they could not believe these guys running around in loincloths, missing teeth, what they could do chemically. They described it as postdoctoral. And they asked these guys, how did you figure this out? How do you do this? And more importantly, how do you pass it on? Well, the answer to passing it on was oral and example, which is the highest form of teaching rather than studying a book or something like that. It's like standing beside a master and you're an apprentice and you do what he does or she does. But more importantly, how did you learn it? The answer was this: the plants talk to us. Isn't that?
That's correct.
There's my footnote to you're never alone. This life is going on all around us. And when you forget about it, it's because you've allowed yourself to get rutted into work and duty and kind of forgot, if this is even a suitable expression, forgotten to remember. You know?
Yeah, forgot to remember. Exactly, forgotten to remember. It's a really, you know, it's a very interesting play on words, and at the same time, it's also incredibly deep.
Yeah. My wife, she speaks to the plants in our gardens and stuff like that,
yeah.
And I find, and sometimes she stops for a bit, and you'll notice that the plants don't grow as well when she stops talking to them.
Well, it's very interesting and true.
Yeah, they can hear us. They can interpret us, and I think this is something we've got as a species, is a really awesome ability to really interact with the other organisms here on a much deeper level. And I think it's part of the New World Order agenda to distract us from that, to make us forget how powerful and how interconnected we all are. And it's part of like a spiritual divide and conquer tactic, in my opinion.
To keep us away from nature, is what you're saying?
No, to keep us disconnected from other organisms, to think that solipsism is more or less the way of things. Like, oh, this is all there is. Everything is my perception. I created all everything and blah, 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 blah. Right. You know.
So, Vinny and Angela, what do you think leads us to a place like 2014 when we have forgotten this? When you look at the Western tradition of astrological ages, beginning with the Golden Age and the Yugas and the Indian traditions. And there must have been a time when we knew this, right?
I mean, before the internet.
is this a natural process we're going through, this Kali Yuga, this what appears to be a fulfillment of revelation if you're biblically centered?
I don't think so. What were they talking about? It says there's a source and it all lives inside us. What they discovered with the Large Hadron Collider is what they call the God particle, the Higgs boson particle, and it turns out that particle is actually in every living human cell. All right, so they spent $8 billion risk creating a black hole that would suck the entire Earth into it just to discover the God particle, which we have inside us all along. And that's exactly what all the religious teachings have actually tried to teach people amidst a whole bunch of distractions this whole time, is that the kingdom of heaven is actually within. That's where your source of inspiration is. That's where your interaction is. That's where everything is.
Okay. Yeah. So here's my response as well. We have the in current modern times, we have the agricultural revolution, we have the industrial revolution, and then we have the information age. And maybe they're all age, and maybe they're all the revolution, whatever it is. We have the, you know, when farms and large families mattered for cheap labor, and then, you know, that whole thing happened, then the industrial revolution, you know, happened, then we're now in the information age, the technology revolution, whatever it is. So when you ask that question, Bruce, about what does our interaction with nature, as Vinny brought up, and oh, we have a break coming up. Wow. All right, everyone, we'll be right back for the last half hour of the show. Thank you so much. Vinny Eastwood and Bruce McDonald joining me. We'll be back right after the break. Thank you, Revolution Radio.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Revolution Radio. This is the this is called the Liberation Nation or something. I think Angela's back there in the background. Are you there, Angela? Okay, I'll take that as a no. So we're just going to pretend like we're live anyway. And I think we're trying to reconnect Bruce back up, and Angela's kind of like trying to jostle around things in the back here. So I'll just kind of try and compensate, you know, like somebody who buys a really, really nice car in order to compensate for something that they're lacking. I have this idea for Revolution Radio, and I think it's a really good idea, is that when you've got a community together and a family within it, it's kind of like I would say it's sort of like the rings of Saturn and the planets. So all of your listeners out there who are supporting Revolution Radio are actually helping our family on this network to continue to survive, to continue to produce content, and in so doing, you're playing a part. Now, Dr. Rima Labo, who also has a show on this network, she told me one very important thing. We were having a discussion about how to convince people of things. And what she told me was very important, and I think it bears repeating, is that on average, it will take 7 different people apparently Dr. Rima Labo has been dropped from the network. But anyway, apparently it takes 7 different people to tell you the same thing before you will abandon a previously held belief. Now, what that means is if you see somebody, I don't know, like at a checkout in the supermarket or something like that, and they're touching, let's say, for example, the ink on the receipt when they give it to you, you could tell them, hey, that receipt there has a toxic derivative called BPA, bisphenylalanine. And what this actually is an estrogen mimicker, and it can either give you breast cancer or turn the men into girly boys. Okay, so you just say that one thing to them, and maybe you're the first person to say it to them, and they'll go like, oh, whatever, and you can just walk on to the next person. Or what if you're the 7th person? Angela, we can still hear you in the background there. Can you hear me? No? Okay. Yeah, this is really bad talk radio here, ladies and gentlemen. I apologize. It's not my fault. I'm doing the best I can. It's not even my show. But anyway, if you happen to be the 7th person who've mentioned that thing to them or whatever, chances are you'll actually click them on. And so the big mistake that truthers go out and do, and they actually try to convince people straight off the bat. You don't know, I don't know you or anything or whatever. But what I'm going to try and do, on the other hand, is try and convince you, regardless of the fact that you're not going to believe me and you're going to get angry. And... Angela, this is really bad. Okay, so yeah, we're getting total back chatter. Angela's not looking at a computer, not listening to it either, and yeah, it's just really bad all around. So we need 6 people to tell Angela to mute her mic, you know, just 7 to 6 different people, and so maybe it'll add to it and get it all sussed out. But what the important lesson is in all of this: don't expect too much of yourself, and all you got to do is play your part, okay? Kind of like Big Sis said, if you see something, say something. And it works for the truth as well as it does for reporting false flag terrorism attacks. That's about right, isn't it? Don't put too much, you know, pressure on yourself to try and convince somebody that 9/11 was an inside job, or that vaccines are really bad for you, or that GMO food will give them tumors and what have you. If they're not prepared to accept it, they're not going to listen to you. And it's kind of like, you know, when you try to, I don't know, get a tick out of your leg or something like that. The harder you try to actually get that sucker out, the more he's going to burrow his head deeper and deeper under your skin. You know, people like retreat into their turtle shell to a psychological degree. And yeah, playing your part, that's all you got to do. Not too much pressure, but it just means that you're kind of responsible even for complete strangers around you who are, like you were, not completely aware of their surroundings, not entirely sussed, as it were, when it comes to trying to understand things. I don't think anybody ever really fully understands things, but, you know, we can try. We can try, because there's no harm in trying, is there? And I think this is the way that we're actually going to wind up waking up people around the world, is not taking responsibility for waking them up, but only taking responsibility to play your part as one of those 7 people that will help them abandon their previously held ridiculous ideas. Angela, are you back? I'll take that as a no. Bruce is back. All right. Welcome, bro. Any thoughts? Yeah, actually, I was kind of done, you know, meandering. I thought I made my point, you know. Just keep going. Angela's like in the background doing all bunches of stuff. She's not muting her mic or checking the computer or something. It's just bad talk radio. So we just basically got to overcompensate. So we're just got to basically overcompensate for it by talking and talking and talking and talking. So, Bruce, go! Bruce, there was actually a mainstream media article that confirmed exactly that DNA carries memory and trauma and inspiration and intelligence and all of this stuff, like, down through the generations. You're completely correct. Well, we're getting a call from Studio A now, so we've just got to crack that open and we'll get that done. So I'll see you on the other side, Bruce. And we're back. Sorry about that, ladies and gentlemen. We've been kind of off air for a section there, and Angela Black is having troubles connecting here as well. So I must sincerely apologize on behalf of the network and myself. Now, there was a question Bruce was asking me, and I think that may have been off air, about our individual contribution to the collective and how we, is there any individual path, or is it all just kind of like one thing, you know, like everything's kind of going in a set path and everybody just sort of has to jump on the current and actually go with it. I don't think so. I think that we all have individual abilities, individual attributes, and individual capabilities, right? So it's the unique way that we contribute that actually matters to the world. If you do the same thing that other people have done, you're not contributing, you're following, okay? And following is very, very dangerous because, A1, you don't know who you're following or why you're following them. And this is what actually becomes really, really dangerous, is if you don't know what your path is. Now, my path, I mean, just using myself as an example, I can't really speak for anyone else, but my path was set before me. You know, I got raised in the youngest of five kids. So, you know, naturally I become a bit of a narcissistic attention seeker later on in life. And so naturally I get myself into talk radio. Naturally I go on a YouTube channel and all of that kind of stuff, initially seeking the self-aggrandizement. But then what I start to learn is that my suffering, my pain, my trauma were actually lessons that I'd ignored for the most part for a long period of time, until I kind of had that aha moment. And the aha moment was that I'm not the only person who's traumatized. I'm not the only person that's having a rough time here. I'm not the only person who actually is trying to struggle their way through life, that there were many, many others. And what this taught me is that you need, or at least I needed, to play a role in this entire movement, a role that didn't exist currently. And I think I've kind of defined it as being a comedian / counselor. Okay, so I'm capable of being there in a synchronistic sense when people need me to be. I was always very, very good at intuiting how people feel some of the time, and always very good at being there when people need me and listening to them intently and making jokes about it to make them feel better about these terrible things that have happened to them. And since I had that realization, it's actually started to change my life in a number of different ways, whereby I actually kind of feel sort of like a nucleus, where there's all these electrons and protons revolving around me, and every now and again they'll come into contact and I will help them and then just send them back out into the other parts of the electron proton sort of a sphere as they revolve around and around and keep on going. I find the ability to energize others, to inspire them, and to help them deal with their traumas is sort of my gig here. Now, a lot of people don't like that about me. They think that because I inject a sense of humor into such serious topics that I'm not taking the topic seriously. They're wrong. You know, it's just that simple. They're very, very wrong. They don't know what they're talking about, and they haven't helped anybody in a long, long time, and they don't really care to either. And I think it's when we realize our obligation to those that are around us that we actually can play not only just a role, but a massive part in human development, one person at a time. That's when you realize your individual power. That's when the source starts speaking to you. That's when synchronicity start occurring into your life. And that's when things start rolling really, really well. And you kind of get into a flow there. Once you figure out what you're here to do, that's when things will open up, not beforehand. Angela, welcome back. No?
Oh, thank you, Vinny, and I apologize.
Apologize again. Like, I think you need at least 10 apologies for what you've just put us all through. It's just kidding.
Oh, my. I will. I'm sorry. Yeah. All right. So anyway, yeah, I don't even know. I couldn't hear anything. I thought it was gone.
How about we not talk about the technical issues and pretend like we're live on radio and people actually want to listen to something other than discussion of the technical issues and apologize and then going back on ourselves like a snake eating itself.
I'll breathe now.
Vinny had just basically paraphrased Pablo Neruda, and I agree completely. He was talking about laughter and comedy being part of serious topics, and Pablo Neruda said, the great Central American poet from Chile, said, laughter is the language of the soul. And I totally agree with that. I mean, if you can't laugh, I mean, don't talk to me about anything else. Have you ever been around somebody who can't laugh? And worse, they can't make you laugh. It's a huge thing in life. If you can't, my God, how could you possibly go through life if you can't laugh? Like, I don't understand how anybody could.
It's funny you should say that, Bruce, because just yesterday I was, I kind of realized how I interact with people now is that I actually spend the conversation as another attempt just to make them laugh and have fun. Right, really. Like, that's the only reason I'm having a conversation with somebody is like to try and make them laugh, and the jokes just come out thick and fast, and we just basically have a good time, and I make people feel better by making them cackle about things that scare them, horrify them, and basically cause them pain. It's really ironic.
It's what I do as well. Okay, wow. So I have no idea what happened for about 15 minutes, but I did have one last or continuing comment. We were talking about interaction with nature. I think Bruce had posed the question before the break, and I apologize. I did not hear it. That's two, right? So I have about eight more to go. I did not hear what had happened when we came back from the break, and thank you so much, Vinny, for your professionalism, of course. And the question was something along the lines of how do we view the interaction with nature today? And I somehow had this, this thought where I was talking about the in the recent time period that we live in, the agricultural revolution, you know, as it's coined, the industrial revolution as it's coined, the information age as it's coined, and the fact that, you know, throughout that time, throughout the industrial and information eras that have happened. Obviously, people moved to the cities and became isolated more and more so, you know, less involved with family, less involved with nature, this type of thing. So I do find that where we are now and what we are doing in this time period is to reacquaint ourselves with that, you know, and I'm not talking about everybody on the planet. I'm talking with the people that I'm talking about people who are in the cities and who may not realize that the trees are communicating with us, that the bushes are communicating with us. You know, rocks are communicating with us. All these different things. And to look at, to watch the cutting down of trees for construction projects, really, I feel pain. I actually feel pain on a regular basis whenever I see a beautiful non-injured, non-dead tree being cut down. I watched this happen on Sunset Boulevard one time. Bill and I had an office over there, right in Hollywood, right in West Hollywood, and there was this 2-day process where it was almost like an alien ballet, whatever that is, where these huge trucks, one would come in and cut down the trees, the other one would come and scoop up the trees, and then the other truck behind it would repave the road, and this was not an accident, and they cut down all of these, you know, ficus trees because they weren't producing enough leaves for shade or something like that, or maybe they were producing too much. And I watched the murder. It was like a war zone. I watched the murder of nature happen for the good of progression or something. And it made no sense to me. And I was there with not only my husband, but a dear friend of ours. And we were just watching this, and it was so loud, and it was a war zone. And honestly, no. Were humans dying? No. But were trees dying for no reason whatsoever? Absolutely. And I felt pain. I did. So I don't know. I think if we're here now, and what our next agenda should be is to reacquaint ourselves with nature, especially us city folk, if you will. Many people live in rural areas and have farms and this type of thing. What I encourage is for, you know, hey, you're walking down the street, you see a tree, why don't you say hello? Seriously. So I think that's my answer to Bruce's question way before the break, way before this whole thing happened. So
now, Bruce, are you actually still with us there? No, he's not. He seems to have dropped off. We'll try and add him to the call, Angela. And also there's a second call in the background there that's going, and I think Bruce is attached to that one. But if that one hangs up, that'll be a good idea. Now, I was also thinking about this when you're talking about like communication with nature, plants, animals, etc. That's what Bruce was talking about earlier about the guy who's studying ethnobotany, and it's basically just the way that ancient cultures interact with plants and flora, fauna, that kind of thing. And it seems to me that a lot of things have kind of like spiritual aspects to them. There's tribes in the Amazon jungle, for example, that there's these two different plants. You take either one of the plants by themselves, it doesn't do anything. But you take them both together and you have a deeply religious spiritual experience, right? You have these massive trips. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering as well, just exactly how much tripping you need to do before you realize that you can trip without taking a trip, right? There was this guru in India, I think it was, and they were trying to discover what a guru saw, okay? And they gave him an acid tab, and he took it, and nothing happened. What they realized was that this guy had actually ascended to such a high spiritual plane that the effect of lysergic acid on the brain was actually null and void because he already saw the world in that much color, in that much brilliance, in that much beauty, with that much euphoria. that to do this drug, which is supposed to induce those same kind of feelings in normal people, didn't work or do a single thing. Now, there's two aspects to this. That one's very dangerous and one's very awesome. One is like you can develop yourself to that point. You know, you don't have to hurt anybody. You don't have to do anything bad or whatever in order to obtain that power. It's simply about spiritual awareness and basically, like you say, interacting with these plants and things and having an awareness of the life and the very varying levels of it around you. And the other one is the real dangerous one, which is to say that perception is reality and that there's no such thing as reality. There's no 3D universe, there's no 5D, 4D, there's no Ds whatsoever. And that's called solipsism, where you think that you create absolutely everything, that your perception and your interpretation of everything that's going on around you is your creation and your creation alone, and that life is just a dream and that you have no responsibility other than to yourself in selfish ways to keep yourself happy and content and not do anything better by humanity. Frack that. As
right.
Opposed to the aquifers.
Vinny, take us out since you were...
All right, I'll take you out.
I did not. <a second. laughs>
All right, you're listening to Revolution Radio, ladies and gentlemen, at freedomslips.com. Thank you very much for listening. This has been Liberation Nation, taken over by me, Vinny Eastwood, because I'm so awesome. Thank you very much for listening. And we will see you on a new... And Angela Black. Let's not forget that. And there will be another show right after the break, assuredly.